A proud sponsor of Insight on Business, the News Hour, is AARP Iowa. With over 370,000 members, AARP is helping families with a host of programs, from Fraud Watch to helping build more livable communities. Learn more at aarp.org.
Welcome back to Insight on Business. Grateful that you are listening to us from wherever on the planet you happen to be. You know, I have been asked questions about this literally thousands of times, and you're about to meet a young man who has traveled the highways and byways of the state of Iowa for 18 years, searching out those businesses that wish to provide kosher products to individuals that deem that to be important. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Levi Goldstein is a returning visitor to the News Hour. Rabbi, so nice to have you here. Thank you.
Same here. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, my friend. All right, and again, I've been asked about this thousands of times over the years. Let's dive in. What is kosher? What does that mean?
Kosher means that something is fit. So you might hear the term kosher not just in matters to food that Jewish people and many other people, in fact, eat it as well. But kosher means that it's fit. So like if somebody's making a business deal, they might say, is this a kosher deal?
Right.
So, but in today's day and age, when someone says kosher, they associate it with food.
And, you know, when I first moved to Iowa years ago, I found it very difficult to find kosher food in Iowa. Today, it's almost everywhere.
Yeah, times definitely change for the best.
Yeah, for the best. And part of your job, for 18 years, you've worked with the Orthodox Union, going all over the state of Iowa, certifying what is kosher, yes?
Yes, I'm happy with what I do. I enjoy what I do. It's a lot of fun. You get to see many different manufacturing facilities, anywhere between spices, dressings, something recently, breads and buns.
Yeah. I mean, it's really remarkable. Now, one of the misconceptions, Rabbi, is that kosher means a rabbi goes in and blesses whatever that is. That's accurate, is it?
That's one of the most common misconceptions that I hear out there.
So what do you do when you visit a food manufacturing facility? What is it that goes on? What do you look for?
So what I tell my clients is that I'm not too much different than an organic inspector, that there's a set of laws. So I chose organic as an example. So there's a set laws for organic, and then they send down their inspector that knows those laws and makes sure that those laws are being adhered to. So that's pretty much the same with kosher, that there's a set of laws that say that foods need to be prepared in a certain way. So I'm going in there, just making sure that everything is up to par.
Yeah, and what do you look for specifically? I mean, I know that there's different, you know, there's some animals, and we'll talk about this as well. There are some animals in the animal production area that are deemed not kosher because... Where do we find that?
Yes, in the Leviticus and portion of Shemini.
Right. And it talks about what animals are clean and what animals are not clean. And so there's, right away, you know that you're not going to be going to a hog facility.
Yes, yeah, that's first off. Yeah, you'll never see me there.
Right. But there are poultry producers. There are beef producers as well. And then there are portions of that. People make hot dogs. They make sausage. It's on the meat side of things. So when you're in a meat facility, what is it that you're looking for to make sure that it is kosher?
So it happens to be meat facilities is the only one where I do not visit. But I do have some knowledge in the meat industry. So in a meat factory is a totally different situation than, let's say, a spice company.
Okay.
The reason is because the way the animal is prepared is a very, very rigorous process. I'll begin with the slaughtering, whether it's a bull or a chicken. The rabbi needs to be slaughtered by a skilled rabbi, so they need to be trained, just like pretty much any skill out there. So they need to be skilled how exactly to slit the throat of the animal. I don't want to get too graphical, but the knife needs to be perfectly smooth. And even the way the rabbi slits the throat of the animal needs to be in a very precision way, and not too fast and not too much pressure. And he needs to go just once up and once down. I mean, you're talking about a lot of skill. So that's first off. The next process in meat processing is to get rid of the blood. So they process the meat, meaning they cut it up into many different cuts. And then it has to soak. Well, first it has to be rinsed, and then it has to soak in blood for salt. In salt.
Yeah.
That's where the term kosher salt comes from, because you need that coarse salt so it doesn't get stuck in the meat. It just stays above the meat and just pulls out all the blood.
And well, this is very interesting, because there is a direct prohibition for Jewish people to not consume blood. Would that be accurate?
Yes, we had that in last week's Torah portion.
Molach, right?
In a portion of Acharei, it speaks about the prohibition of blood.
Yes. All right, so animals, different than spices. You mentioned spices a couple of times. So when you go to a factory that makes any number of different spices, what are you looking for there? I mean, we understand the meat side of this. Spices?
So here are a few kosher concerns that could be with spices. First of all, spices coming from the land of Israel. Over there you have a bunch of laws of tithing, where they have to, every crop that grows, well, in this case it's spices, it's really any produce, they have to take a portion of it, and today I think they just dispose of it. That's a whole other discussion about today's day and age where there's no temple. But at any rate, there's a whole bunch of laws governing crops that grow in the land of Israel. So I need to make sure anything that comes from Israel, which, by the way, it's a very, very small percentage, because the majority of spices are coming from all of these third world countries like Indonesia, I've seen from Spain, some other countries that I can't even pronounce their name. Then you have issues of there's non-kosher, quote-unquote, spices, such as chicken bouillon, other spice blends that they put in various flavorings. There is what they call meat tenderizing stuff. They're putting in even dairy stuff, which is another kosher concern, where dairy needs to be kept separate from non-dairy. So when I go into a spice facility, I'm looking through their records of blends, their blend sheets, or more layman, simple term, is their recipe books. I need to make sure that all the ingredients in there are kosher. And if they're running something that's dairy or non-kosher, before going back to kosher, they need to be doing a thorough clean out. So I need to look at their cleaning records to make sure that they're cleaning it out properly.
And because that residue that might be on the machinery that they use would then render something that is kosher non-kosher, yeah?
Correct. What we call it is the carryover of the flavor, or cross-contamination.
So this is very much like organics, isn't it?
Yeah. It's where, again, like I mentioned before, there's a set of laws, and then you need to make sure that they're following those laws.
Now, you mentioned bread as well, and biscuits and things like that. There's a whole realm of laws about that as well, yes?
Yeah, and there's actually a fascinating law about breads, and that is where there's a prohibition, according to kosher law, to have dairy bread. So if you're baking a bread, I'm talking about just a regular loaf, there's a prohibition of putting in there even kosher milk. into just a loaf. Now there's
And why would that be?
That for the simple practical concern of somebody taking that dairy bread and eating it with a meat meal, because bread is bread, and it could easily be confused. So you might grab the dairy bread instead of the just regular non-dairy bread.
And one of the things about that is that all of these labels that we see on products, whatever they happen to be, I notice lots of people read the labels. I mean, they're very conscious about what they're consuming these days, and they look for Jews and even non-Jews. Because I know some of our friends that follow Islam can also partake of some kosher foods.
Sure.
As well. So ingredients are very important, but they're also looking for a symbol that you are awarding these manufacturers and packaging companies, and that symbol is a circle with a U in the middle of it, correct?
Yes.
And what does that mean?
It stands for Orthodox Union. So in the name itself, there's really no indication of kosher other than Orthodox. Orthodox is has the meaning of people that follow the Torah law. So kosher is, of course, a set of laws of the Torah. The Orthodox Union is an umbrella organization. Kosher is just one area of their organization. The OU has many organizations under their umbrella, such as NCSY, where they have an outreach program for the youth. They have Yachad for children with special needs, and then they have another outreach program for Jewish students on campus. And the beautiful thing about the OU is that all the funding that comes from kosher goes directly to these other non-profit organizations.
So the business side of this, if you will, if a corporation out there wishes to be inspected for their breads or their biscuits or their spices or whatever it happens to be, they then have a payment to OU to make sure that their product is certified, yes?
Yeah, so we could segue into the business aspect of it. So this is what typically happens. So the OU gets a call, hi, we're such and such ABC manufacturing, we would like to be kosher. So the first thing is they ask them just simple questions to see if it's even feasible, because sometimes it's just not feasible. Let's say they're doing it's. Let's say it's too complicated to do what's called a kosherization or sterilizations, which we could speak about that at a later, maybe later on in the show, where what if a factory is doing non-kosher and they want to switch to kosher, so they don't want to just do non-kosher all the time. They want to please customers that are both kosher and non-kosher. So week one, they're going to run non-kosher. The rabbi would come in and sterilize the line so that in week two, they could run kosher. But not always is that feasible for many reasons. So that's the first question. Is this even feasible? And then once we get through that, then the OU sends down an expert, an experienced rabbi, to go and actually check it out. What is the situation on hand, which we call an initial inspection. Then the company needs to submit a master list of every single ingredient in that facility. Every ingredient needs to be processed and to make sure that it's actually kosher, or if there are any ingredients that are compatible. So let's say they're running a kosher garlic bread, and they also want to run a non-kosher garlic bread. We cannot allow them to use a compatible ingredient that same garlic flavor. Let's say they have a kosher one, a non-kosher one. We do not allow that because it could just easily be confused. So this is all what the rabbi has to do and to determine are any ingredients there compatible. Again, which compatible means there's a kosher version of it and a non-kosher version of that same flavor.
The business of kosher. That's Rabbi Levi Goldstein. And to hear more, Stay with us, because coming up is part two about the business of kosher.